Welcome to Books in the Biz, the show where real-world business meets real-world results. Hosted by business strategist Dan Paulson and veteran CFO Richard Beltry, this podcast breaks down the stories, trends, and financial insights shaping today's companies. Dan brings decades of experience helping leaders simplify operations, build strong cultures, and scale with confidence. Rich adds his deep financial expertise from guiding organizations across healthcare, construction, logistics, and professional services. Together, they dig into what's really happening behind the numbers and what it means for owners, executives, and anyone trying to grow a stronger, smarter business. This is practical conversation, real talk, and tools you can use right now. Welcome to Books in the Biz.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Books in the Biz. Happy July 2nd. Not quite to July 4th yet. But we're getting there. We're getting onto holiday weekend, and I thought it would be fun to talk about something July 4th related. So we came up with our top 10 things that businesses can do to create more freedom for themselves. So, Rich, how you doing? Are you getting ready for July 4th?
Yeah. It's a barbecue weekend. So I've already been to the butcher for the fresh stuff. And yeah, we're going to be good. How about you?
It's pretty quiet here. I think we're doing some barbecuing on Sunday. But other than that, pretty much just sitting around cooking in the heat. So we're being barbecued, not anyone else. But
yeah,
going to be a warm one.
I'm going to fry an egg on my head.
There you go. All right. Well, I put everything on a PowerPoint here. So we have the top 10 changes you can make to your business to get more freedom. For those of you watching the video, there is a PowerPoint to this, but we will tell you each of our tips as we go along here. So I got to click over here. Let's see if this works. This is a little bit new format. Hey, it did work. Good. So number 10, Rich, this is you.
Yeah, I when I went through and kind of came up with my ideas for business owners, you know, I think if you haven't outsourced your bookkeeping yet, do it. I think that you get a whole different perspective when you're reviewing numbers rather than when you're preparing numbers. So don't do it yourself. If you don't have to, don't do it yourself. And the biggest thing is hold the bookkeeper accountable. Make sure you're getting numbers, make sure you're reviewing numbers on a regular basis, and then know your numbers. Like, know what's happening in your company. Because what I always run into is, oh, I got a bookkeeper, I'm so happy. I'm like, how's your bookkeeper doing? Oh, okay, but she's about 3 months behind. Well, you know, then your numbers are old. So, you know your numbers, make sure you're getting the reports and really know what's actually happening, but don't prepare them yourself because you can think about things differently.
I agree with you on that. You talk about 3 months. I have a client that is 6 months and still waiting for their numbers. And I'm going, well, why are you paying the bookkeeper? Because it doesn't seem like the bookkeeper is doing anything. So often I talk to business owners, and this is primarily in companies, you know, under, I would say, $20 million, where the owner really, as long as there's money in the bank account, they're happy. And we've talked about this numerous times. I don't think we got to expand on it too much, but it still surprises me the number of people that as long as there's money there, we're good. We might not know where that money's going, or we might not know if we're profitable or not. I worry about that when it comes time to pay taxes, and then I complain that my taxes are too high.
Yeah.
So I think that is. Go ahead.
I had one that was had to be 9 months. They hadn't seen a good number, and yet they had been paying every month. And the other problem became, you know, business owners know the cash balance. They know what's in there. It's really easy to open up your app and it'll tell you what your cash balance is. And you probably know your receivable numbers because you know what you billed and you know who owes you money. But usually the issue is that you don't know what, you know, who you owe money to, or you're paying all your bills as they come in. So you're way out ahead on your vendors, but you're behind on collecting. So, you know your numbers, really understand the whole picture of where you stand.
Yeah, and I think that's again where somebody like you comes in and really almost have to put together some sort of educational program. I mean, they need to understand how the numbers work. And I think, you know, accounting can kind of confuse people because what's an expense versus what goes on the balance sheet, and, you know, why am I paying this loan but only seeing this number here, and that's not the whole number because the other numbers on the other form. And I just don't think people understand how that impacts cash flow and profitability. So you're completely correct there. So we're on to number 9. And for number 9, that was me. And I put down build leaders, not followers. And what I mean by that, Rich, is I find a number of companies that the owner controls everything. Even the managers and supervisors they put in place need to report to that owner and get their feedback or their direction from that person, instead of the other way around, where the supervisors are coming in saying, this is what we need to do, this is why we need to do it, and here's the action I'm going to take. Is that okay with you? Or, you know, here's what we did, and here's the outcome we got from it. I find a lot of cases, again, especially in those smaller to medium-sized companies, where all power is controlled by one person. And we have a bunch of managers. And as I tell people, you know, if you have managers, managers manage things, leaders manage or lead people. And most managers just control functions and they're usually directed by somebody else. So it becomes ineffective when it comes to handing off power or trying to get stuff off your plate if everything's got to roll back up to you. I don't know what you see from the CFO side out there on how much that control affects a company, but I see where it really holds profitability and growth back when stuff like that happens.
Yeah, it's no different from the numbers departments. You know, it's the same thing. I don't want people coming to me and asking what to do. I want people coming and saying, here's what we're proposing. What do you think? Love to have that conversation. Hate the first one.
Yep. And that gets us back to now number 8, which is you. So creating a trusted inner circle. Tell me more about that.
I think one of the first, you know, it goes back to what you were saying in number 9, you know, that you have one person who's in charge of everything. Then why do you have so many people? You know, because, you know, you need to build a team of people that you trust to give you the information as you need it and provide you with proposed solutions. You ultimately have the decision, but you need to have people around you that give you the information that you need and you can trust. So, you know, when you hear people talking about having an advisory board, they have certain people with certain levels of experience that are around them, so they have someone to ask when they hit a problem they're not really sure what to do or they want an opinion. That's what they're looking for, and that's what I suggest. It doesn't have to be an advisory board. It has to be where you have the people around you. You know who they are. I don't care about the titles. You know, just, you know, people around you that actually give you an idea of, here's what we think you should be doing, and leads to a debate possibly, but for the most part, you know, these are the people who are going to give you the advice that you already know is going to be good.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've got an example of that. And, you know, we're working with, I'll call it a healthcare company. So the owner is looking to diversify themselves out of the business eventually. And kind of same situation going back to point number 10. He wasn't getting good financial data. He wasn't getting accurate financial data that was updated. And on top of it, he was getting pushback from his accounting firm that they didn't want to do the things he was asking them to do. And it wasn't illegal things. It's just they had a different mindset of how they should do their accounting and taxes than what he needed. So they were pushing back on a lot of things that he was trying to implement. And that's when I brought you in. We brought a bookkeeper in. I've also brought some marketing people in. So now he's getting different levels of expertise from different people. And that's really going a long way to supporting his goal of where he wants to get in the next couple of years. And, you know, maybe you can speak to it from your perspective too, because, you know, there's your side of it coming in and what you saw.
Yeah, I think that with that particular case, the changes in the numbers were profound, I would say. And not profound in that the old accountant was doing things wrong, just he was highly conservative. He wasn't going along with sort of the, you know, more aggressive plan that the doctor had used someone else to develop. So there was pushback for no reason, you know. Mm-hmm. The pushback really came to, you know, some of the issues with the plan, but that can be worked through because you just basically have to have communication with the doctor dealing with the healthcare company. And, you know, as we went through it, you know, giving him the advice and letting him make the decision made a whole lot of sense. And it really became a team effort as opposed to I'm on board, but my team's not on board, and they weren't on board for the wrong reason. You know, be on board for the right reason, right? If you don't Yep. agree with it, tell them you don't agree with it. That's fine. You know, if you think that the plan, because a lot of times people put together a plan that's, you know, out of this world, but it costs more money, right? It costs more money than it actually benefits for the doctor. So in our case, I think it's working out, but you really had to keep working through it with the doctor so he understood why you were maybe resistant, or maybe you were just trying to point out to him that this is one of the things that was a little bit too far-fetched. I don't want Right. to call it far-fetched. That has a really negative connotation, but you know, it has an effect of, are we getting the cost-benefit right? Is the benefit more sufficient than the cost? If you're paying less taxes because you're paying more bills, that didn't really work to the plan's intent, you know? So in our case, we were looking to, you know, let's get to the intent. Let's make sure everything works. Let's bring it up with the doctor and let's keep refining, because there's certain things about it that just, you can't run there was no practicality to it. There was, right. You know, there was the, you know, change the plan to fit what you're trying to do, or change the day-to-day operation to fit what you're trying to do. That didn't always work. And that's where you had to work at it with the doctor in communication.
Yeah. And I would say, here's the other thing about that trusted advisor, because, you know, this ultimately led to what brought you into it, because he was already a client of mine. But because he didn't use his team of experts, he made decisions based off of feedback he was getting from a salesperson. So he made the purchase without consulting somebody who could ask those questions early on, determine if the ROI was there. And we kind of ended up in a situation where he committed to it. He made the investment, paid the money, and we were left to try and figure out, okay, how do we recoup what he's invested in this? Because it's kind of like, well, you already opened the barn door, the horses are out, and we have to figure out how to make this work. And that's really what it came down to there. I think what he's learned now is that he has trusted people that before he makes decisions, he can go to and ask questions and get feedback. And, you know, that even relates to him wanting to sell off part of his business. He's now reaching out to you, he's reaching out to me, he's reaching out to others, to make sure his decision-making is sound and that he's getting all the information, just not just one side of the feedback that he's getting from that one person who might have a different vested interest in the outcome. Yeah. You know, that's the thing we're always scared about, is who's benefiting from whatever they're trying to implement. Is it the client or is it somebody else? And I think that's something we always have to be careful with. Number 7, create repeatable systems. Rich, I know you'll like this one. This is one of mine, but we want consistency in an organization. Doesn't mean things can't change or can't be updated. At the same time, though, we need to make sure that the systems we have in place can be repeatable. And, you know, why is that? Well, most of us don't have the luxury of employees that are never going to leave us. In fact, I think if we look at statistics right now, most Gen Zs, Gen Alphas typically last 1 to 2 years in a position before they move on to the next. And if all that institutional knowledge is tied to a single individual and none of it's documented or repeatable, when that person is gone, you basically have to start from scratch. And I see this time and time again in organizations that think they have the right person in the position and they're going to keep them forever. And then all of a sudden they decide that they either don't want to do that type of job anymore and completely leave that industry, or they get wooed away by another company or competitor. And now they're doing that work for somebody else and you lose all that knowledge and have to start over. And I'm sure, you know, from the financial side of it too, if you're not consistent in your systems and those systems aren't repeatable, it makes a huge mess of the numbers, doesn't it?
100%. 100%. I mean, the accounting side of what I do, you know, should absolutely be repeatable. Obviously, little things will be different. You know, something will happen 1 month that didn't happen the month before. But other than that, the process is almost a checklist, right? It's really following the exact same thing year over year or month over month. And, you know, once you do that, you keep things consistent. And as long as they're consistent, they're comparable. And then you have realistic kind of analysis.
Yeah, if you don't have that, it's going to be very hard going back to, you know, everything seems to circle right back to point number 10. If you're not getting the right feedback, if you're not following consistent procedures, which to your point is a good reason why you hire a bookkeeper, you end up in those situations where you're going to end up costing yourself more money long term. So it might seem like those expenses are only outflowing, but really they can save you money and save you time in the long run. Number six, this is you, Rich.
Make your clients or customers follow your process. So if anybody out there who's listening thinks about this, okay, how many times do you set up your processes and procedures, especially around your billing, that you bill the customer and the customer says, I'm going to do it my way. I'm going to pay you when I feel like it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to decide when and where I'm actually going to, you know, ask you the questions. I'm going to wait 30 days and then I'm going to ask you about the bill and ask you about the work that was done for the bill. And I'm sorry if I'm insulting people, but we all go through it. You bill somebody and then the questions come, but they don't come right away. They wait because it's a tactic, whether it's an intentional tactic or not, it's a tactic. It's a tactic to delay. It's a tactic that I want to wait. And there's always a secondary reason that you won't know what it is. So biggest thing I would tell you is there is so much time wasted by not having clients or customers trained to do what you're asking them to do. Okay. You're going to bill them on the first of every month. Then you expect that you're going to get payment by X dot, you know, by X date. And that should be laid out. When it goes beyond that, then you have the right to say, what are you doing? Okay. Because you're costing me time to come after you for something that we agreed on. So that's where I come up with the idea of make everybody follow what your process is. Now, if your process is crazy, maybe you have to think about your process. Okay. But for the most part, you've set it up based on what everyone is generally doing. And the one guy or the one girl that turns around and tries to do it their own way throws everything off. So make it a priority. Put it in there that you want your freedom because you don't want to spend your free time or your freedom time to turn around and have to go chasing the admin.
That I love that you brought up this point. And here's why I love it, because I had this very same conversation yesterday with one of my clients. So this is a company, industry that works in manufacturing for construction. And they're, I liken it to push-pull. So right now, the way their business is set up is they have to pull information from their clients. Plans, you know, colors, type of materials, all this stuff has to be pulled out of them. And they're basically stuck working on the client's timeline. And Rich, you've been involved in construction. You know as well as I do, it's only a priority to that construction manager or that supervisor or that business owner in construction when they need it right now. And the products we're talking about takes them weeks to produce. So they're in a situation right now where they're asking their customer for stuff. And of course, it sits, it waits, weeks go by, sometimes months go by, sometimes almost a year goes by, and then finally they get an answer and, oh, by the way, we need it in 2 weeks. Not possible. So this is where we're trying to move it from a pull method where we're trying to pull information from it to exactly what you brought up, which is the what I would describe as a push method. Here's when we need the information. Here's how we need the information. If you do not provide it in this timeline or this procedure and you don't pay us in this timeline, we cannot guarantee the work is going to be done when you need it. And it's a slow moving ship, because if they're an established client, they're used to doing things their own way. And they have a lot of established clients. This is not a new company. They've been around for a number of years. So we're running into the situation where there's this pushback from the clients, but all your new clients, they don't know any better. So especially with those new clients, that's where you got to set your procedures and stick to them and hold those people accountable to it. Because again, if they're going to push you around, they'll try to do so very early on. But if you say, this is the way we do business, if you don't like it, then, you know, go somewhere else, I guess. That's what to me is a key in creating a lot of freedom in your organization, because you do waste a lot of time trying to track and chase down people if they are trying to do things their own way and it's different than what your business needs to maintain its profit and its sales goals. Number five, and I'm sure you can agree with this. This is one of mine. Establish an accountability system. Accountability is not telling somebody what to do and then walking away and praying to God they do it. It is actually doing the follow-up. And where I get stuck with people is they then push back and say, well, that's micromanagement. If I have to go back and check in with them, I might as well do the job myself, because that to me is just, again, more involvement on my part. And my argument has always been, if there is no accountability, then people are going to do whatever they do. So back to the last example you made, if you're going to, create a system and not have anyone follow that system, then they're going to do whatever they want and you're stuck with the consequences to that. To me, a big part of freedom is making sure that if you have employees and you have people in place to do jobs, they understand their roles, and more importantly, they are responsible for reporting back to you what they're doing, how it's going, and informing you when they need help. But it's not asking you to do it for them. It's they got to come to you with a solution, and you have to guide them to that end result. And to me, that's where accountability in a lot of organizations, especially ones that aren't like corporate America, it's a common problem I see, where there just isn't that accountability level that there needs to be. And that's very costly.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is an extension also, okay, just to kind of add to what you said, you know, the bookkeeper who didn't give you a bookkeeping report for months, why is that person not held accountable for the fact that they owed you those reports because you needed them to run your business? There's potential damage there, right? Especially right. If you have no clue. I mean, I think online systems becomes a little bit of a gray area where everybody thinks, well, you know, you can go on and you can see exactly what we did because it's done in the QuickBooks online. If you're not spelled out, then if you didn't spell out that you want it on paper or you want it in a PDF or you want it delivered to you by email, like some of that has to be spelled out. That's part of this accountability, right?
Right.
Did they send you a report? Did you get it? Did you understand it? Did you have a scheduled time to go over it if there are questions? So again, accountability adds to, was that our number 10? That we keep going back to number 10, right?
Everything seems to revolve around the bookkeeper.
It all comes from the bookkeeper.
A lot of freedom, I guess.
But yeah, I think that's just an extension of what we started with, that, you know, you're not holding them accountable, then who else aren't you keeping accountable?
Right. Exactly. All right. Here's number four. Back to you.
Block personal times on your calendar. I absolutely 100% started doing this a long time ago. When I have something going on for my kids, for my wife, I put it on my business calendar. Why? Because it's important time that has to be taken care of. And you need to know when these things are coming up that you can't have other things show up. You have to be ahead so that you can have the freedom to do the things that are important. You know, not just the business is important, and it's real easy for the business to become all important and all encompassing. So take the time to actually put your personal schedule into your calendar so you know what's coming up when you need to do something else, and then you can clear the way that you can do that on time and not ruin your personal life over your business life.
Well, that comes back to personal accountability. If you've got your schedule out there and you can see, you know, when you book something, a ball game with the kids or a dinner with the wife, whatever it might be, if it's in the calendar, it's to hold you accountable to making sure you attend those functions. Because as you said, business can become all encompassing. It can take over your life if you let it. And ultimately, that doesn't lead for good work-life balance, which we've, you know, talked about in the past. And I think that's the biggest struggle that many business owners fall in, is they feel like they need to work all the time to be successful in the business. And if that's all you do, your quality of life is definitely going to drop from that. So I appreciate you putting this down, because I don't think many people put their personal calendar in their business calendar. And I know with mine, because we have, my wife is set up on the calendar too, so she can see when I have meetings, and I can see when she adds personal functions to it, or when I add personal functions to it, we can both see what's going on. Even our kids, to much of their dislike, get our meeting updates, because they can see what we're doing as well. They're less calendar focused, I think the younger generation is, than we are, but it's good idea for them to do that as well. Number three, so make the business visible. And here's what I mean by this. You know, Rich, you're a relatively small business. I'm a relatively small business. It's real easy for us to keep what we do in our heads and focused on, you know, our own thing. And I look at companies, you know, with 10, 20, 30, 50 employees, sometimes even more than that, where the owner is making all the decisions and has their vision or their strategy spelled out, but it's in their head. They haven't communicated it to anyone else. So the business isn't visible to the employees. Now, when the owner asks an employee or gives a directive, they don't understand the why that's happening. So that leads to more pushback. That leads to more questions, maybe more confusion, because again, there isn't this clear understanding of what direction the business is going in. And I would guess from a financial perspective too, if you're not creating visibility, and maybe this is where you can talk more about, you know, how visible do you make the numbers, for example, because I'm a bigger believer in some degree of transparency in what's going on the balance sheets and in the checkbook and in the P&L, then maybe most companies are, or most business owners are comfortable with. They, for some reason, believe if they hide those numbers away because they don't want their employees to see those big numbers, because then they'll just ask for big raises. You know, that to me is an issue, because I believe the reason employees ask for those big raises is because they don't understand, while you might be making a certain amount of income, that doesn't all go in the owner's pocket. There's other things that need to be paid for.
Yeah, I think I'm a big proponent of making the numbers at least somewhat visible. Control the visibility a little bit, right?
Sure.
Because of that, you know, if you're putting out a report that's not 100% complete and you know some of the background behind it, your staff may not. So they may think, look at that profit. He's making all this money. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I can give you a big example. The other day, there was a big profit on somebody's P&L, and they were asking questions about it. And then I took a few minutes to look at it, gave them a call, and said, yeah, you made all that money, but you need to make money in order to pay off the debt. You know, so if you looked at cash flow instead of P&L and balance sheet, which is probably what you would share, you know, with your staff, you know, the balance sheet would show that you've paid off a bunch of debt. So the money came in and the money went to pay off the debt. So maybe next year you can give better raises, but your cash flow is still somewhat behind because the profit had to be made to pay off that debt. So staff don't usually think about the debt. They certainly right. don't think about the balance sheet, right? A lot of times the owners aren't even thinking about the balance sheet.
I would agree with
the
that.
Staff too. Definitely, yeah, the staff definitely won't. So if you're showing a lot of profit on your P&L, make sure that you understand it, you know, because this owner called me with the question of, you know, if I'm showing all this profit, why don't I see it in my cash? And that's because you had to see where did the cash go. And when you go to look at the balance sheet, that's where you found it pretty fast. But that was the direction I had to give. Go look at the balance sheet and look at this year versus last year. And you can see those things aren't on a P&L.
And to me, that's also a great opportunity to show where the owner is reinvesting in the company. You know, take a manufacturing company, for example. If you're buying new equipment,
yeah,
a lot of that's going to show up on the balance sheet. It's not going to show up in the P&L. So the employee might see that, hey, we're making all this money. Yeah, but we just bought a $500,000 piece of equipment that you now get to use that saves you time, is safer, you know, causes less energy yeah. use. You know, a lot of less physical labor, and that's really helping us grow. So while we're making good profit, we're also reinvesting it back in the company to help make your job easier, make us more successful. Mm-hmm. And that's the part where I don't think a lot of companies talk about that, and they just make assumptions that the employee is going to see that and know what that money is being spent for. All right, number two. This is back to you, I believe.
So I particularly was thinking about service businesses because I work with a few of them and I can see that what they're billing is discounted. You know, people will look at numbers and go, I think you should charge more. So this kind of came up as reminder that your time is worth something. It's worth something to you. Your experience is worth something to somebody else, to a client, to a customer. So if you're billing, not everything has to be at a discount. You know, you're worth a certain value and you should be billing for that. So make sure that you're charging the right amount for the time that you spend on someone. And, you know, not everything is a gift. You don't do this because you want to give them a Christmas present with a ribbon on it. You know, you're giving them something that helps their business, helps their value, helps them grow. And in the meantime, you did this on purpose. You know, you learned all this stuff. You went to school. You went to however many years of experience that you worked for someone else. And you learned a lot. And that's what you're basically saying to people is, look, I'm charging you this because this is how many hours it spent. These are the tools I used. You know, you're paying for your portion of that. So make sure that you're charging what you're worth and, you know, feel free to have the conversation, but don't discount everything. Just remember that you're not always a discount, you know, you're not always a discount broker.
Yeah. And one point I think, you know, to even add a little bit more clarity to, because I think this is where some companies, some clients or prospects struggle is, for example, I work a lot with construction, manufacturing, you know, they're used to paying people by the hour. Mm-hmm. So they try to equate everything that you're billing for as an hourly rate. And I know you go through this too. There's the hours the customer sees, there's the hours they don't, but there's also, as you pointed out, that level of experience that they don't have, which is why they hired you in the first place. Right. So they see this number. And they see this number is higher than they would equate that if they had hired somebody at an hourly rate to do it. So that's where I've experienced the pushback, where they'll say, well, you know, you're making X amount an hour. That to me doesn't make any sense. And you have to politely explain to them, well, you also didn't accumulate 35 years worth of experience, and you're looking for a shortcut that's going to save you time, make you more profit, and help you increase your sales. You're paying for that knowledge. You're not just paying for my time in a chair, let alone the time that you're not seeing me there that you don't even account for. So this was a big one for me, because I think all too often we all try to, you know, we want to help clients, we want to help people. And sometimes we take it to an extreme where we, as you point out, discount ourselves too much in order to, you know, maybe soften the blow for that client. But at the same point, the clients need to understand you're bringing in a value, and you can decide if that value is worth it or not. But you decide that before you sign up. You don't sit there and nickel and dime the person afterwards saying, well, I only saw you, you know, 5 hours this week, and you billed me $5,000. I don't understand how those numbers work. At that point, it's too late. You know, you should have really had that discussion well ahead of time to understand where the value is coming in at.
Yeah.
All right. Now we're down to number one, and these are in no particular order. I think we should have probably put the bookkeeper first, because we talked about them most of the time. But refine the owner's role. And I've been talking about this a lot with clients, and I think we've had discussions about certain clients we're working together with where role clarity is really something that's lacking, and it's lacking across the board. In this particular example, I'm going to say define the owner's role. So we'll just focus on the owner for a minute. Does the owner have clarity in what they're supposed to be doing in their own company? And I would say in most cases, no, because when you start getting them to reflect on that, there's what they want to do and there's what they're actually doing. And I don't think they always see the difference until you sit down and talk about, you know, what should be your role in the company. And in most cases, the primary role of the owner in the business is to drive the strategy forward and help the company grow. It's not to make sure the payroll is done. It's not to deal with employee arguments. It's not to deal with fires that need to be put out because, you know, somebody screwed up something and you know, now the owner's brought in to take care of it. It doesn't mean you're not involved in that, but that's not your primary role. And I think too many business owners, especially in small to medium-sized companies, see themselves as being all-encompassing and in everything. I think you even mentioned this in one of the earlier points we were talking about, where they feel like they have to do everything. So then they get involved in everything, which then really dilutes their role to the point where the things they should be focusing on, they never actually touch because they're too busy dealing with the management side of the business than the strategy side.
Yeah, totally agree with that. I guess I could call it rampant, right? Like, I don't know if it's just because, you know, if you founded the company, you started out doing everything, and then you get to the point where you need to realize when a certain task is overtaking you, and that's where you need that help. And a lot of times owners don't do that. They just, they focus on that because it's becoming bigger, it's taking more time, so they just put more time to it, and they forget about the fact, as you said, that you're looking to get to this point where, you know, you divest of certain tasks. And, you know, I think a lot of people figure it out when you get to that point, but there's a lot of people that you realize there's 11 people sitting around waiting for you to give them a decision because yep. You haven't truly divested. You've held on to everything, and that those people are all waiting for you to give sort of the rule or the blessing. And that's the redefining that I see, that you have to actually get to the point where they realize that you're handing it off to them and you're hoping that they understand that you're expecting them to complete it. And that way, you know, you can again focus on the strategy because those people are now handling the day-to-day that you had to do before.
Yeah, I would say if there was a 1.1 to this, so, you know, you were bringing up, well, why did they do this? I believe a big reason is fear. So to your point, you know, if they started the business and they were one person and now they've grown to 10, 20, 50, a couple hundred, whatever, the business is still their baby. And they still see this as their primary source of revenue generation, income, whatever you want to call it. And I believe they get a little fearful that if they were to hand off that responsibility to somebody else and that other person made a mistake, especially a costly one, it could cost them the business, which is why they want to stay involved. Back to that whole role accountability stuff. Yeah. It really, I see a lot of owners struggling to let go because they're so concerned that if they do, something's going to happen and they will no longer have a business left. So they have to figure out how to effectively delegate off and put other people in charge of that, back to, again, that accountability piece. And I think that's key and probably one of the most important things here. That wraps up our 10, and I'm sure we could go on and create another 10 or 20 more pretty easily. But I think for the sake of freeing up your time, Rich, and freeing up mine, we can just say they should get a hold of us if they need any more help or they're feeling like any one of these points that we talked about makes sense to address. So, Rich, how do they get a hold of you if they're not watching the video?
The video is showing my email address at rich@xcxo.com.
And mine is also there as well, is dan@xcxo.com. Actually, it's .net, isn't it? No, it's .com.
It's .net.
It's .net. Dan screwed it up. No accountability on my part. I didn't check with Rich on the PowerPoint. So it's dan@xcxo.net. It's rich@xcxo.net. And please reach out to us if you have any questions. We will make that adjustment for later. And Rich, as always, thank you. Have a great holiday weekend.
Same.
Enjoy the
you.
Brats, the burgers, and the steaks or whatever else you're cooking.
Yep. Yep.
Absolutely. You're a little too far
Same
away,
to you.
So I won't be driving over to raid your food.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks again. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. See ya.
Thanks for listening to Books and the Biz. If today's conversation sparked new ideas for your company, the team at XCXO can help you turn those ideas into action. XCXO brings together seasoned executives, fractional CEOs, COOs, CFOs, and CXOs who step into your business with the experience, strategy, and leadership to drive real results. Whether you're trying to scale, strengthen operations, improve profitability, or prepare for transition, our experts help you move faster and lead with confidence. To learn more or start a conversation, visit xcxo.net. That's xcxo.net, your shortcut to stronger leadership and a better run business. Thanks again for joining us. We'll see you next time on Books and the Biz.